and what one of the sequels to it is. First, it'll appear in a magazine called Sports Collector's Digest. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay, it's a weekly publication full of ads for baseball cards and things like that. And that's mainly what it's aimed at, the baseball card hobby. But in addition to that, it has occasional articles and interviews with former players, and that's what this is. Now, one of the outcomes of this is your fan mail will increase for a period of about 3 weeks after it appears.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't care for that, but most
do. Doesn't bother me.
Good. I'm glad. A lot of guys, well, I guess the guys that get up, don't want it in the first place, don't want any more. So, okay, let me ask you then about, well, I'd say 12 or 14 questions, and if you would, please just answer them as short or as long as you see fit. And if there's anything you don't want to answer, although they're pretty generic questions, if there's anything you don't want to answer, just say so, and we'll skip it.
Okay.
Okay, you started out, you started out at the University of Arkansas, and then went to both Texas Christian and Texas and played in a couple Cotton Bowls.
That's right.
Were there any pro football offers?
No.
Okay, so you...
This was during the war, and I never had played... I didn't play football in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I just went out in college just for something to do. I was in a Navy training program at the time, so I was in the Navy. And I just went out, why, I don't know, but... And, of course, back there, we didn't have a whole lot of players. And so I was just an average football player that played a lot because we didn't have that many players.
Well, you must have been pretty good because you played on a couple pretty good teams.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I was no, I wasn't any pro prospect.
Uh-huh. You played with a pretty good quarterback there at Texas.
Bobby Lane?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was all right.
Well, he died here a couple years ago, didn't he?
Yeah,
he
sure did.
He was one of my favorites when I was a kid, too. Okay, did the Cubs sign you out of college?
Yeah. I had played after my third year in college, one with TCU and two at Texas. A scout by the name of Jimmy Payton had followed me and asked me if I wanted to play pro baseball, and I had, of course, I had no idea about doing that. I never had dreamed of being a pro baseball player, and then I figured, well, hell, I'm gonna be getting out of college pretty soon. I got to do something. So anyway, I went up to Chicago and tried out, and they offered me a bonus, which back then, if you had a bonus, you had to stay with a major league team. You couldn't go to the minors, and I knew that I probably need some minor league experience. So what we did was take a major league contract for 2 years, and I would. Figured I'd know in 2 years whether I wanted to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the contract then was $6,000. Today, I think they pay you $100,000.
Yeah, there's a little difference. Cost of living.
So I played those 2 years, and I just kept on playing. Played 10 more years after that.
Well, you had I didn't figure it out, but you had about a .315 minor league batting average. You were very successful.
Don't know what that average would be, Brad.
Well, it was good. Well, you had here it is. You had 322 with Des Moines, 318 with Des Moines, and then, that was just the first part of the season, and 298 at Oklahoma City, then back at Springfield, 315. Were you a third baseman all along, or did they?
Yes.
The Cubs called you up the last month or so of 1950?
Yeah, from Springfield, yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you have any difficulty adjusting, or was it just another stop along the way?
Well, I think the first game I played, I hit a home run off of Bickford, I think, in Boston to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I just drove down from Springfield to Boston and went out and played that night and hit a home run off of Bickford. So,
that's pretty impressive.
And I think I hit fairly good the last, we played a couple of weeks. Of course, it was an adjustment. It's got to be. I wouldn't say it wasn't, but it came. it was baseball is baseball. It just in the minor leagues, occasionally you face major league pitching. Whereas in the major leagues, theoretically, you face it every day.
Right.
Not exactly true.
Especially of late.
It's just a matter of adjustment and experience.
Were you considered a rookie in 51, or had you lost your rookie eligibility?
I think what happened is I was not considered a rookie because at that time, if you played a number of games, and I don't know what it was, 20 or 25 or whatever it was, then you were not a rookie anymore.
It seemed to change every year or so back in those days.
Actually, I was not considered a rookie that my first full year in the majors. And I think, Willie Mays, I believe, that was his first year, too. But I had just as good a year as he did, but I was never even considered as a rookie.
Well, that's a shame because you had an excellent year. You were first or second on the Cubs in every offensive category. Actually had the best offensive year of any first-year player in the league, including Mays.
I had played five or six games before they sent me to Springfield, and I played 15 or 20 after I came back, and that just precluded me from a rookie designation.
I think also at that time they had some kind of ruling about when you were on the roster, too.
I have no idea. In all honesty, he didn't pay much attention to those things back in those days.
Well, yeah, it wasn't as big a deal as the papers make it out today.
Uh-huh.
You started off with banging the field, too. You were, assume if they gave gold gloves at that time, you probably would have been right in the running for it.
Well, they didn't give them. I don't know when they started giving those things, probably in the 60s or something.
I think 57 or 58, something like that. Yeah, just about the time you were leaving, I guess, is when they started. But you did, I don't know if you're aware, you led the league in putouts and assists and total chances and were second in double plays.
Something like that, I don't remember.
Yeah, 52, looked like the pitchers caught up to you. What happened?
Well, what honestly happened is I hit behind Hank Sauer all year, and he was the most valuable player in the league.
That's right.
And I must have been knocked down 100 times. I guess I was hit by pitches 20, 25 times. It was just, it was a horrible year. Of course, I can't blame it entirely on that, but, they vent their frustration out on me, and I didn't do anything. it was funny. I saw Hank Sauer not too long ago at a banquet, and we talked about that. It was a bad year because they were mad at me and I didn't do anything.
Well, they're afraid to get mad at him. He could hurt him.
I can tell he's bigger than I was.
He was, I met him once. He was an awfully nice fellow.
He really is.
You snapped back in 54 and 55 and made the All-Star team both times. Excellent production, both batting and fielding. The 55 All-Star game, you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, it was, I think Aaron, I can't remember whether Aaron hit in front of me or behind me or whether Mays hit in front of me. One of them was on base. Whitey Ford was pitching, and I singled to right, and I can't remember whether I knocked it. I don't know whether I knocked any runner or just booted around, running around the third.
You knocked somebody in that was on base.
And then it was either Aaron or Mays or some single, and I went around from first to third and slid into third base. And the third baseman there was Al Rosen.
Yeah.
And we were behind one run at the time, and the ball got by him, and I got up and scored the tying run. I think it was either eighth or ninth, and then Mutual hit one out in the 10th or 11th, the bottom of the 10th or 11th to win the game.
That was up in Milwaukee, is that right?
Yeah.
That was back at a time when the National League might not even showed up for the All-Star game. Things were going so bad for them.
Could have been. But that was a big win for us.
Yeah. The year before that, you had a all-rookie middle infield. Banks and Baker.
Yeah.
I lived out in California then, and Gene Baker played out there for a couple of years. I think it was the wrong there, but what did you think of Ernie Banks when he first showed up?
Well, of course, Ernie was the first black, and, you know, I had no qualms about playing black people, you know, athlete, and I've never played it. In my career, I never played much against blacks because either in football or in baseball because there just wasn't much in college or in pro back then. And but, you know, people are people. To me, Ernie has always been a real nice guy. You know, he's just a queen and appreciated what baseball did to him, for him. And so, you know, everybody got along with Ernie. And same way with Gene. Nice guy.
Baker was a little bit on the old side when he finally made it. Hadn't he played in the Negro Leagues for a few years?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, if I remember, he was around 30, I think, but it's been a long time ago.
But both, you know, real nice persons, and I thought very good ball players.
Never, actually, since I write baseball, I read about baseball. I've never read anybody, and you don't read too much about Baker, but I've never read anything that anybody said bad about either one of those two fellas.
No, I can't think of anything either.
Okay, you left the Cubs. How did it feel being traded?
Well, of course, it was great. I think every ball player's ambition is to be with a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And we had held up the league at the Cubs. Not that we just went through our routines, but we never had the material to, I think, the past. I think one year we came in fourth, which was a big plus because I think we all got about $250 apiece, which was big money back then.
Yes, indeed.
But to get traded to the Dodgers was just, how great could it get?
Yeah.
And playing against those guys all those years and knowing what kind of team it was, you couldn't have asked. If they'd come to me and said, we're going to trade you, where do you want to go? I'd said Brooklyn and the Flash because of their tradition and the ballpark and the guys they had playing for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was tickled.
So you got to the series that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. The next year, you hurt your knee. What happened?
I was running down to first base in Pittsburgh it was Thomas or somebody was playing first base. And they jumped up in the air and they came down on top of me. And when I hit the bag with my left leg at the same time, they came down on top of me and it bent the knee backward.
Mm, boy, that hurts.
Yeah, and they stuck me in the hospital. And of course, it takes an awful long time for a knee it took them about a week to decide not to operate. Of course, nowadays they can go in there and operate and not even leave a scar and you're back running around in a week.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, it took them a week to decide, and they decided not to, and they left it in traction for a while. And then, of course, it takes you a month or so after you get out of that to get it back in shape. So just one of those years that you get hurt in the first part and you can't ever catch back up.
Well, that pretty much effectively... Well, it did stop you from being an everyday player, even though you didn't play a couple more years. Did it bother you more?
The knee?
Yeah.
No.
So once it was healed, it was okay.
Yeah. But then they got to, because I expect by that time I'd reached the 30-year-old, and all the teams back then were always looking towards their farm system.
Mm-hmm. And you were 32,
now they
had I guess.
More in the farm system, I think, than they do now because they've got so many ball players.
Mm-hmm.
But I played a couple more years after that, and then I figured I didn't want to be a coach and didn't want to hang around and so forth. So I just walked in the Cubs at the end of the 59 season and said, thanks, but no thanks. I think I'll just retire.
Well, that's good. That's a good way to go instead of trying to hang on and them having to tell you to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you had one... thing you did in Brooklyn that nobody else could ever do. You hit the last home run by a Brooklyn Dodger.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah. September 28th, 1957. Do you remember it?
Who was against or who it was off or...
You don't remember it at all?
No, I sure don't.
I'll be darned.
Well, you know, why do you remember those things? You know, I'm sure there's a lot of things that happened to ball players that are very, you know, go down in history, but they don't remember it. You know, who would even go back and search and find out who was the last ball player to, who was the last Dodger to hit a home run?
Yeah,
somebody did, I guess.
It's nothing to thinking about at the time, that's for sure. Am I the last one?
It's just like if I'd have thought at the time, I'd have stolen a bunch of uniforms.
You wouldn't have to work today if you did that.
And I'd bought 100 or 200 1952 tops.
Oh boy, yeah.
I think last time I checked on mine, it's 150 or 60 bucks.
Oh, those 52 tops cards are just unbelievable.
I bought one for $40 back years ago and got it framed.
Oh, well, in framed, it's probably worth $300 today.
Yeah.
Do you have your baseball cards?
I've got a bunch of them, uh-huh. I've got as many as I've found. I think every year I've got them in a collection framed and put on the wall.
That's nice.
And I've got a lot of pictures that I've had that various things happen, you know, grand slams and called out on strikes in the World Series. And I sent one off to President Eisenhower when we were meeting him at home plate during the World Series. Not only on the pitcher's mound, the World Series, that he and I were just fixed to be introduced. And they took it, and I sent it to the White House, and he sent it back autographed with a nice note from his secretary.
That's nice.
You know, things like that nobody else in the world's got, but... I've got a pretty nice wall.
Good. You were a collector then during your playing days.
Well, no, I really never have collected. I just, these things, all of a sudden, I realized I had them.
Oh.
And I just decided I'd put them up on the wall. But I've never been a collector, which is probably a shame.
A lot of fellows I've talked to said that they never dreamed that what they were doing, the things they were doing it with, were going to be worth anything. Even, you know, there's a little sentimental value, but not even that much, they said at the time.
It's like all these autographed balls I've got. I think they're wearing out, and I should have sprayed them a long time ago.
Well, I don't know. I've read that ends up damaging them, too. That the only way to keep them is to put them where nobody can see them so they don't get any light to them.
Uh-huh.
Which seems kind of a waste of time and effort.
Yeah, it does.
What did you do when you retired?
Well, I went into the life insurance business and have been in it ever since.
Have you been with International Life the whole time?
Well, you mean Georgia International?
Yeah.
Yes. Of course, they've been bought out and the name has changed and so forth, but basically, yes.
How did you get to Athens and when?
Well, my first wife was from Athens, and the year after the World Series, we went to Japan, and I just told her, she went to Hawaii with me, and then she came back, and we went on to Japan, and I just told her to stay home, and when we got through in Japan, I'd come on back, we'd spend the winter there, and I liked it, and just decided to stay here. It's a nice town.
Yeah, I went to school there, class of 73.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, class of 69 and then class of 73. I got more school than most people need. I liked it in Athens, so there's just not a darn thing I could do there to make a living. Back to your playing days. Who was the best player that you think you saw?
Well, you know, when you're talking about hitters, you've got your Musials, and of course I was always a great admirer of Williams, although I didn't see much of him. But in the National League, Mays, Jackie Robinson, of course, was as good an all-around baseball player as there was.
A couple of fellows have told me that for about 4 or 5 years, he was the best player that they ever saw.
Yeah, he could do anything. Mays was capable of doing everything, but he didn't have all the instincts that Robinson had.
Mm-hmm. Did he get them later, or did he just learn later?
I don't know whether he ever got them. You know, Robinson knew when to steal and how to beat you. And, of course, Mays just had the great speed and the great defense. Of course, he was a great hitter, too. But it just Robinson had something little extra that I don't think anybody else in the league had.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, of course, there it was Banks. I enjoyed, you know, watching him and playing with him. And there was a lot of great hitters, but it's hard to pick out one that was the best. Of course, it's hard to not put Stan Musial on top of anything.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be. What about pitcher? Was there one pitcher that you think in your time was better?
We seemed like every time we played Philadelphia, we got Robin Roberts, and he was always tough. But I got a lot of hits off of him. I guess because I faced him so much. Magley was always very tough.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Dodger pitchers were tough. Carl Erskine was really a great pitcher. I don't think he got as much notoriety as he should have.
Mm-hmm.
He had all the tools. And of course, Drysdale and Koufax were, when I went to the Dodgers, were just batting practice pitchers. So I faced Koufax one time. I don't think I ever faced Drysdale.
When you faced Koufax, he was just another kid, wasn't he?
Well, no, this was probably
at the end.
59. He was a starter.
And he was just starting.
Yeah.
He wasn't what he became a few years later.
But, you know, I think people forget that Koufax just really had a short career.
Yeah. People seem to think that he was slow maturing, but actually he was probably in his early 20s when he finally did mature. He'd been around so many years.
Mm-hmm.
Was there one pitcher that you had a particularly hard time with? You mentioned Magley. What about him or some of the other guys?
Of course, I'm trying to think back in the teens, but of course, on any given day, anybody walked out there was tough.
Yeah.
But I think consistently, you have to say the Magleys and the Roberts and the Spahns were ones that are going to get you out a heck of a lot more than you're going to get base hits.
Uh-huh.
Spahn was a great pitcher. He had a great fastball, a great curve, great change, and of course, he was a smart pitcher. Lou Burdette was a good pitcher. But if you face them enough, I don't think anybody's going to consistently get you out because you're going to luck into something.
Yeah. Well, you swing a bat, that's what they say. You must swing a bat, dangerous.
One day I faced Hart Wilhelm when he was a starter, and I got three hits off of him. If you put them all together, they wouldn't have gone 90 feet.
They look good in the paper, though.
Yeah.
You had a pitcher on the Cubs that, you know, I was a kid and I didn't know much, but I always thought that if he had been on a better team, he could have been all right. Bob Rush.
Yeah, I don't know. Bob was never consistent. A nice guy, and I guess he had the potential, but he would pitch one good game and three bad ones, and one good game and he might have. You know, of course, it's hard to tell on something like that because it's a supposition. But he was. I don't think he ever got much publicity. And Bob was just another pitcher, I think, in the eyes of everybody. But mm-hmm. He was probably our best pitcher at the time.
What about Paul Minor? He got hurt, but he had looked like he might have been something at one time.
Well, yeah, Paul had. I think he had the potential, but he just never really got started. He was a good hitter. I think when he started, he was supposed to be an outfielder or first baseman or something. But
I didn't know that.
He was always a good hitter. But he was kind of in the Bob Rush. He just never really got it together. And either one of them, I expect, as you said, if it had been on a winner, they might have done a lot better. Of course, anybody would, I guess.
Yeah, well, that makes a big difference. Did you have is there one game from your career that stands out? I mean, you don't remember the last home run in Brooklyn. Of course, you would have no reason to. But is there one game that really stands out in your mind as a particularly good game, or one that was very exciting to you?
I played in 4 or 5 no-hitters. Now, those were just a lot of folks never go through their career never playing no-hitters.
But Erskine no-hit you guys once, didn't he?
Yeah, and Sam Jones I played. In fact, I played with Magdy when he threw it. When he was with the Dodgers, he threw a no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you think, of course, when you think of games that you enjoy or you play, you think of games where you got 5 for 5 or 4 for 5 or hit 2 home runs or hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth to win a game or something like that. But I think probably the most thrilling game to me was with Brooklyn when we were playing Philadelphia, and it was the last part of the year, and we were fighting for the pennant, and we were behind 5-2 in the bottom of the ninth, and facing Stu Miller. And he walked Pee-wee, and then Pee-wee was batting second, and Duke Snider was batting third. Snider hit one out, and that made it 5-4.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came up, and I was hitting cleanup, and they changed pitchers. And the pitcher, and I can't remember who it was. But anyway, he threw one, a ball, and then he threw a strike, and I hit it in the seats and made it 5-5. And then the next hitter was Hodges, and the first pitch he threw him, he hit the seats, and it won the game.
Oh, boy.
And 3 straight home runs in the bottom of the ninth. And I don't know whether that's happened very often, probably not.
Well, 3 straight home runs are rare enough, and all in the bottom of the ninth is, I think, would be pretty scary.
Yeah, fighting for a pennant.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a crowd going wild.
I bet.
But I think, you know, that when you think of one big game, that kind of hits you 20 eyes.
Yeah, I bet it does. It must have been something. Since you started over 40 years ago, there have been a lot of changes in baseball. What do you think the biggest one is, the one that's had the most effect?
Of course, I mean, that's the easiest, the salaries.
Is it? I know from $6,000 to $100,000 is a change.
You know, that one year I was the only Cub in the All-Star game, had a great year. I had to fight for a $1,000 raise.
Oh, boy.
And it's just, I think the biggest raise I ever got was $2,000, $2,500, and and nowadays the record that I had, which was probably a little bit more than average, you know, I'd be making $700,000 or $800,000.
Oh, probably more than that. 2-time All Star.
I know money is relative now, but I don't think our $8,000 or $10,000 compared to $700,000. Money is appreciated that much.
No.
But it's a real, you know, of course, if I was playing today, I'd be fighting for that, too. Of course, all of us, all ball players, I guess we're jealous. But I think the ball players are greedy. I don't think anybody's worth $2 million.
No, but if they're going to give it to you, I don't think anybody's going to try it down.
They opened Pandora's box years ago, and they can't close it, and so that the players are taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the way it goes.
I don't know, power to them. I guess if I did it, I'd take it if somebody'd give it to me.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not worth it. Talked about fan mail a few minutes ago. Do you receive much fan mail today?
I probably get 10 or 15 letters a month.
Yeah, what are the autograph requests mostly?
Yeah, that's all it is.
And you sign?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Good.
I'm delighted that people even remember me.
Oh, well, heck, you're one of my, I guess, 10 or 12 favorite players back there in the 50s.
I tell you, the Cubs never remember you. I have not.
Really?
I have never heard from the Cubs. I've never been asked to play in any old-timers games. They don't even know I exist.
Well, that you were the Cubs team for a couple of years before Banks showed up.
They don't care.
Well, that's terrible.
It's a real shame. I have asked for years on the Equitable All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked them, they usually send you a letter asking where you want to play, and I've asked every year to play in Chicago. I've never heard a word, and don't expect to, I don't guess.
Well, that's a shame. Do you play there in Atlanta?
No, I've only played in one Equitable Old Timers game, and I had to phone up and fuss like hell to get in that.
Well, I'll be darned.
They just don't. They asked me to play in Toronto at the last minute. I guess that's because somebody didn't show up. But anyway, I'm not being facetious. I just think it's a fixed, not a fixed thing, but it's pretty consistent. The same players playing it all the time. And,
yeah, that's what I've heard.
And
all the.
I don't think it's run right. I don't think it's fair. Of course, a lot of these teams do, they just say, okay, you pick out the guys to come. And now the Dodgers, hell, I've been all over the country playing on Dodger old timers games. They're a first class outfit.
Everybody says that Dodgers best outfit in the major leagues to play for.
San Francisco. I played in New York. I played in Los Angeles. And it's a good feeling. For that, they send things out to you. They put you on a list. They send you information. And they're really first class outfit. I wrote the Cubs about 10 years ago and asked them,